Welcome to Net Zero Investor with Mona, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. Today, we want to take a closer look at the outlook for carbon credits in 2025 and what the agreement on Article 6 that was reached at COP29 could mean for this nascent market. I'm delighted to share that we have Michael Mutris, who's Chief Marketing Officer at ITMO, a company which sources, structures, and sells globally compliant carbon credits. Michael has about 15 years of experience with carbon markets and climate finance, and is also very involved in a partnership with a coalition of rainforest nations. We also have Ian Gladden with us. Ian is Head of Treasury at Banktrust and has many years of experience in trading desks across many banks and is also a fixed income expert. Ian has been quite actively involved in the launch of the first carbon credits for Suriname earlier this year. So hopefully we'll be able to shed some light on that. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's turn to you, Michael, first. So what has actually been agreed at COP29? Maybe you can run us a little bit through why it was, in your opinion, so important that there was an agreement on Article 6.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for having me. What I would say is that, first of all, I think that COP29 was arguably one of the best COPs that we've had in my 15-year experience and history. And that's precisely, you mentioned why, it's about Article 6 that was signed. If there were three key points that I wanted to share with all of you, point number one would be that, was there an amount that was agreed in terms of, you know, how much money that we need to deliver in terms of climate finance? Yes. And that was $1.3 trillion. Point number two is that, okay, so how much of that money can we deliver from the north to the south? And that was $300 billion. So is that going to be delivered? I don't know. That's not for me, you, or Ian to say. That's for the public treasuries to decide. I would like to think that, yes, that will be the case. But I would also like to think that, you know, we can, you know, the private markets and the capital markets can also contribute to that $300 billion. And that's point number three, which is Article 6. People still don't understand how big of an issue that is. 3 or 4 weeks ago, 196 countries basically signed and agreed that, look, if you're a country, you're allowed to issue carbon credits, if you're fulfilling the Paris Agreement, and therefore you're allowed to put them onto the global markets, and you're allowed to raise money, leverage money, but at least you can contribute to the Paris Agreement and to that $1.3 trillion fulfillment that needs to be done. And this is where Article 6 comes into play. And this is where I think all the institutional investors, the whole private market can play a part in contributing to the global success of the Paris Agreement. So I think, in essence, these are the three key points that people need to understand. And that's where we are right now. And that's why, you know, we're partnering and we have partnered with Ian and Banktrust to deliver that.
The interesting bit here is, of course, that even before this deal was being reached, ITMO and Banktrust have teamed up with the Republic of Suriname and actually what you describe as the world's first sovereign cup, launched the world's first sovereign carbon credits under Article 6. So that was before that deal at COP was being signed. So how important is it for you then that the deal was being signed when you were able to launch this even beforehand?
I cannot underestimate what we've done and what we've achieved with the Republic of Suriname and with the Coalition for Rainforest Nations. It took us three years of due diligence, and to make sure that, you know, we had all the right processes and systems in place. And this is why it took us so long to do that. And yes, like 3 months ago, we were able to issue those first sovereign Article 6 credits. And yes, they're coming from an emerging market country, Suriname. This is precisely why, you know, we've partnered with Banktrust to help us, you know, distribute and syndicate all these credits, because we're talking about a huge amount of credits. We're talking about more than 1 million tons. This is not just a small project. This is like a nationally, you know, sovereign issuance This is why we needed a partner like Bank Trust, because we needed somebody and someone that knows both the emerging market world, but how to issue properly financially and institutionally, you know, structured products at national level to the international markets.
And so just to run our listeners through that, what this entails is obviously Suriname committing to protecting its rainforest, to conserving biodiversity under the Cancun safeguards, also supporting the 17 sustainable development goals within Suriname. So there's quite a broad spectrum, and all that then feeds back into Suriname's nationally determined contributions, which really sounds amazing. But if I'm listening to this as an investor, how do you back this amazing initiative? How do you invest into this?
Well, I would like to invite everybody into our data room, because we are also the first company with Bank Trust to have presented a proper data room that offers, I think that there's 56 documents in there where investors and buyers can look into every single document. You know, some documents are 10 pages, some documents are 200 pages, but at least it explains to you in proper, you know, legal format what these carbon credits are about. You mentioned about the carbon, but yes, carbon is just the proxy. It also includes what you just explained. It includes the 17 SDGs. It includes the biodiversity element at national level. So, you know, protecting and enhancing all the species at national level. And another point I want to make sure that people understand, it also includes the local and indigenous, you know, local communities and indigenous rights. I think that's very, very important. That's something that people need to understand. Suriname is a very big country if you compare it to the UK, because it's almost the size of the UK. And imagine that it's covered by the rainforest. Imagine, you know, the side, you know, UK covered just with rainforests. And that's what we're trying to protect. And that's what, you know, that's where your money is going to. It's hard to put into words all these elements, but that's what we're trying to do when you buy or when you invest into an Article 6 ITMO carbon credit.
Let's turn to Bank Trust's role in this, because you're obviously a bit unusual. You're based in London, but you're an investment bank focusing on emerging markets. Who are you targeting with these carbon credits? Is it Western corporates? Is it institutional investors?
Hi, thanks, and thanks for having me here. We are a slightly unusual financial institution. We are, yes, UK-based and UK-regulated, but we focus entirely on the global emerging markets. And by that, we mean we bridge global investors, it's a truly global community these days, with investments in emerging markets, whether they be debt or equity. So we have very good, strong relationships with many of the major dedicated emerging market investors, but also we have very good relations within countries, within our regions, whether that be Central South America, Africa, Middle East, Central Asia, etc. So we're very interested from the point of view of what is the impact or potential impact on the countries within the rainforest nations. If you look at the map of those countries, it very much is an emerging markets map. And we actually see these sovereign carbon credits as a hugely transformational tool to actually really impact on the balance sheets of some of these countries. And if we take Suriname specifically, it's a relatively small country in financial terms. It's struggled in terms of its defaulted on its debt. But if we can open the door to them being able to realize significant amounts of annual proceeds from selling their carbon credits, then that could be truly transformational on their balance sheet. So the buyers, in essence, there are, I guess, a variety of different buyers with different reasons, and that's what actually makes them a marketplace. And that's where we're interested in this product, because we feel that it needs to become a financial product like any other financial product in order for, if you like, major corporates, DFIs or investment funds to buy into the product. Money is not just going to move without it being authorized and people understanding how do you book something, how do you account for something, etc. So if you like, the boring bits of the accountants and the lawyers have to be able to make sure that it gets done properly. Therefore, that's why we think that this is a product that we want to become involved in. And I think one of the ways is why do people want or believe that this is a good product? I think I go back to, it was a luncheon that actually Michael and I attended back in COP28, which was with a bunch of interested investors, and that included insurance companies, major corporates, fund managers, et cetera, all interested in the subject matter. And one senior representative of a major European corporate said, well, we understand now that we need to, if you like, Greenpeace have won the argument, we need to be green, ESG compliant, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to work on something that actually makes it easy for us to do that. And the concerns with, for example, some of the VCM markets was, as this gentleman observed, he said, in terms of scale, I'd have to do 50 or 60 projects around the world. And that's difficult. That's not my main job. And if I get one of them wrong, all of a sudden I'm the bad guy. It's the only product in the world. Buy a carbon credit and it turns out not to be a good one. You get the blame as the buyer. So it is the sovereign carbon credits, we think, more interesting. Firstly, it's in financial products terms, a voluntary carbon market in general is a forward price because it's something that's going to happen in the future. Credits have already happened. So you don't have any risk of the fact that the carbon credits might not actually materialize. That's backward looking, which is great. So effectively, you're creating a spot price for carbon, which is how any other market in the world starts with a spot price or has started with a spot price before it becomes a forward price. And therefore, also from the buyer's perspective, because it's UN certified, you've taken that reputational risk out, assuming you're comfortable with the UN, of course, and their processes, which you can see via the data that Michael described. There's clear transparency. We believe there will always be liquidity because people will trade these credits. And you therefore have the scale, which is important. And then beyond that as well, there is the strong use of proceeds structure around these carbon credits in terms of the governments have to have the national plan to say exactly what they're going to do with the carbon proceeds, and that process gets audited. So we think it has that kind of robustness around it that makes it interesting to both, yes, investors, and those investors can be those, as in fund management investors, it can be corporates, it can be, of course, in order to be written off, which is essentially what these carbon credits are designed to done as people move to a net zero position.
Very interesting. Just thinking back at last year, I spent much of 2024 writing about a row at the Science-Based Targets Initiative and all the problems with the voluntary carbon market, problems and opportunities, I should say. But it's certainly been controversial. And I noticed a lot of institutional asset owners, because of these kind of mixed headlines, have been quite cautious to adopt that. So I guess important to convey here that this is a significant difference from the voluntary carbon market because you've got the sovereign issuers. It's not forward facing.
I think that's the key thing. And certainly these are not mutually exclusive. I think, you know, we've had conversations with many of our friends in the VCM marketplace, and they're obviously making great strides and efforts to make that market more robust. But we think that they are complementary in terms of some of the comments we've had from other VCM members as well. Actually, if you could get the sovereign carbon pricing to be transparent and to be liquid, that actually enables us and helps us with the forward market effectively of the VCM marketplace. So I think, yes, you know, investors do not want to wake up with egg on their face. That's a key issue, and you understand why that is a major issue. So that's why we believe that you need scale, and you need that transparency, and you need that reputational risk removed.
I do certainly feel, I mean, this is just based on anecdotal evidence, but from the asset owners, from the pension funds and insurers I've been speaking to recently, that the tide is turning on carbon credits, and there's a lot more willingness to adopt them. I mean, this is still very early days, but...
It is. We have, obviously, relationships with a huge number of major real money investors, and they are interested in the subject matter. You know, every major corporate is interested in the subject matter. It's truly a global issue, and everybody is therefore wrestling with how they manage this process. And there is no silver bullet that will solve all of the ESG problems of the world. But what you need is lots of small building blocks. And this is one of the building blocks that helps start that process. And if you start with carbon credits in rainforests, then you can extrapolate that out to potentially other markets, whether that be methane, whether that be seagrasses, all areas that people more qualified than I will be able to talk about. But for us, it's we'll get the first small building blocks working and then see how this market develops. And if we get the Suriname issue done, which we believe we will do, it opens the door to 53 other countries or around 50 of other countries who can also believe that this is a process that they should be behind.
You're talking specifically here about emerging market issuers then?
Well, the majority of the rainforest nations are sovereigns. And I think it's interesting if you look at the potential for Suriname. They defaulted on approximately $600-700 million worth of debt. I haven't got an program. They've got a GDP of about $3.5 billion or so. The proceeds, if we sell the first amounts at around $25 a ton, approximately $125 million goes into Suriname. If they then have an annual production of, say, 10 million tons, they believe going forward is the approximate number they will have, the amounts that go into Suriname become quite substantial. And we produce locally based research out of LATAM, and we produce research on Suriname. And our head of research is comfortable saying, well, okay, if I believe that there is going to be an annual input or revenue stream into Suriname, I can start putting that on Suriname's balance sheet. I can start having a look at what is the impact of this forward stream of revenue. You can look at it like a royalty stream that comes in every year as a vintage of wine, if you like, and you can sell. Now, that becomes a real game changer for a country like Suriname. And obviously, if you look at the other countries within the coalition, many of them, of course, would be very welcoming of that annual revenue stream.
Because obviously, a huge issue is that a lot of climate investments have gone into Western nations and emerging nations, which are perhaps in most dire need to fund their infrastructure in the transition.
Yeah, well, this is the key thing about this. You know, this is where the money actually goes directly to the sovereign. It has its national plan in terms of what it wants to do and how, you know, how it manages its proceeds. And so it really is, you know, if you look at the majority of the buyers, will probably be global companies and or fund managers. It is a way to shift some of that $1.3 trillion from the global north to the global south.
Mm-hmm. Seeing this again from the point of view of institutional investors, I guess the interesting question is, where do these carbon credits sit in your portfolio? Are they part of an infrastructure allocation? I mean, we're seeing a growing number of nature positive funds, for example, being launched.
Yeah, absolutely. And that then comes down to when you're launching a new product, is that you can get, if you like, comfortable, you like the product, you think you want to do it. And then you have to work out how you fit that in your existing structures. You know, has your fund got that as a product that they can put into the fund? Does it need to be done at a central office of the fund managers and then reallocated? If fund managers can't buy it, we can, in theory, turn these into bond issues and have them as securitized issues if that makes it easier for somebody to buy them. So it becomes the making the decision that this is something that you want to do and it fits into your strategy. And then obviously you have the, if you like, the practical implications of how do I book it and how do I account for it, etc. So those are the conversations that we are having with fund managers and with corporates and with the DFI world, is in terms of, yeah, okay, we're understanding how this process now works. We then have to work out how we can then fit that into our structures.
One aspect, and perhaps a question for both of you, I'm trying to get my head around, is the price of these credits. Because I know in the voluntary carbon market, there's a huge uncertainty on where prices are going to go to in future. And some investors speculating that they might rise significantly if corporations buy more credits because they need to meet their net zero targets. But how predictable is the price of Article 6 carbon credits?
First of all, I think it's a very good question. Second of all, I think that, you know, we have done, and this is where, once again, we've partnered with BankTrust, and Ian can chime in about this. We've done some research about what should be the pricing in terms of Article 6 carbon credits. People need to understand that, once again, this is not a voluntary carbon credit pricing system. This is a price that, you know, reflect the national benefits and everything that has been done at sovereign level, as well as the international system. So the Paris Agreement, the whole global carbon agreement market. And so that price is obviously a lot higher than the current, you know, VCM carbon credit price. And what we did with BankTrust, well, I didn't do it, but the analysts, the very, very, very talented people at BankTrust did a pricing scenarios from now until 2030, I believe. And Ian, you can chime in then. And we did like 10,000, you know, pricing, more than 10,000 pricing scenarios to figure out what the price should be and where the price is going to be. What people need to understand that we're talking about more of a price that's closer to the current regulated market, the current, you know, ETSs of the world, for example, from the EU. And so therefore, it's going to be closer, or it's going to be biased towards what today's price is. I did not look at the price today, but let's just say that's 75 euros. It's going to be going towards that price rather than going down to the VCM price. But Ian, if you want to complement what I've just said.
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, whenever you're starting a new market, pricing is sometimes more an art than a science. And yes, you can do simulations, which we have done. You also do comparisons with other markets and with other either VCM prices or other exchange prices. But ultimately, it will come down to the buyer against the seller. Where is the seller willing to sell? And it's for the seller, in the case of Suriname, it's like, well, okay, what is the opportunity cost here? If I maintain my trees, I get X amount. If I allow them to be chopped down, I get Y amount. So therefore, it's got to make economic sense to the government to do that. The way we will then test that is within the marketplace is saying, okay, to buyers, we're thinking about this price. What do you think? In the same way as we would do a fixed income bond issue. So you treat it with a similar kind of process and you do price discovery and you hopefully come up with a consensus where buyers and sellers are happy to exchange. And then going forward, yes, you will have then, hopefully, a traded market. You will have other countries issuing. You then become a case of like any other market. Then you have the supply, demand, fear, greed factors come in. Now, some people will buy these in order to just retire them. Some people will buy them, yes, potentially for speculative reasons because they think the price might go up. And obviously, look at some of the reports in terms of the scale at which some corporates and entities may need to buy carbon credits, then you might make an educated guess that the price might well go up over the few years. But as we know with all commodity markets, and if you treat this effectively as another commodity market, prices can go down as well as up. So I think that's the kind of process that you go through in terms of testing the market from both sides to see where is that first price equivalent.
One of the areas we already touched on, I think is probably closely linked to price, is making sure that the issuing country is getting a fair deal. How is that being ensured?
Well, that's one key element of, the difference between what Article 6 is about and the current voluntary carbon market, which is that we need to, and by the way, like 95% of the monies goes actually to the country and to the local communities and people that need the money to protect and enhance the rainforest. And that's been done, once again, at national level. It will be audited at national level, but also at international level with the UNFCCC. So once again, it is a transparent process. Every single penny or cent will go to these communities and will be audited. And people need to understand that that's the new world. The new world is about giving the maximum benefit, the maximum amount of money in terms of, effectively protecting and effectively, impacting, making sure that there is no negative effect within the country in terms of climate change and based on the Paris Agreement.
I mean, the same thing, I guess, applies then for any allegations of greenwashing, because that's obviously been a huge concern in the voluntary carbon credit market. Again, auditing here plays a big role.
Yeah, I think these, again, in terms of bringing in a new financial product that has to have the same quality controls, if you like, as any other product. And therefore, yes, if Suriname doesn't do what it says it's going to do with its proceeds when it receives it, then probably investors won't buy next year's crop, if you like, of carbon credit. So there's a strong encouragement for the countries to do what they say they're going to be doing over time. You could envisage the fact that different countries will have obviously their own different structures of how they want to use their proceeds. And investors may or may not prefer different countries' methodologies, but that's something that could develop over time. But certainly what this does give is a very clear outline as to what the proceeds are going to be used for, whether that is hospitals, schools, paying rangers to prevent the forest being chopped down, etc. And having that strongly audited so that people know that this is actually being done.
I think we covered quite a lot of ground here. Perhaps to conclude this podcast, it would just be good to hear from you a few thoughts on your main predictions for the Article 6 carbon credit market in 2025. Will we see more countries issuing them? What's going to happen?
Yeah, people don't understand yet that this is a huge, huge issue. Basically, to get 196 investors in a boardroom to agree on something is very, very difficult, right? To get 196 countries to agree to a global framework about what these carbon credits should look like, how you issue them, everything around issuing them and trading them, that was agreed. That was agreed like 3 weeks ago. And Now you're given, Ian is given that rule book. I am given that rule book. All investors are given the same rule book. And people need to understand that the market is open and we need to figure out how to use our collective intelligence, collective investments, leverage it, et cetera, to meet that goal. And I think that once people understand that rule book, and I invite all investors and all buyers to come into our data rooms, then they'll understand that this is an institutional investment grade financial product that they can use into their portfolios and for their investors, for their clients, to be able to both meet their requirements and their green requirements, provide the success to the Paris Agreement, and make the world a better place. So this is where we're coming into in 2025. And once again, I invite everybody to contact us and at least look into what this product is.
Okay. Ian, over to you.
Yeah, well, Michael said pretty much a good summary there. But I think, yes, the key thing here is that this is the potential key that unlocks the door to a huge amount of financing from the global north to the global south, which enables the global south to pay for their own development gains and aims. And I think this is the key thing, is that if you want to have that ambition realized to move the cash from the north to the south, you need to give them a product that enables them to do that, that protects their, I say, reputational side, as I said, and gives them the scale that they can do it at. And if we can do that, there are 50 plus countries out there that potentially will be benefiting from this new marketplace. So again, as Michael said, we'd encourage anybody who's interested to get in touch with us and would happily have a more detailed conversation.
Great. Well, for now, thanks very much to both of you for joining us and shedding some light on that Article 6 and potential implications. It's been really useful.
Thank you very much indeed. Been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mona.